This episode of the PlayStation Plus Game Club is brought to you by our wonderful members on Patreon. Your support really means a lot to us, and we wouldn't be able to make this community what it is without you. So a special thank you shout out to Against Me, Jordan Vickers, KingK6969, Ben Khan, Diego Juan, First Mage, Gary Cooper, Super Hans, Rob Stevens, and Pat, the Trophy Hunter. If you're interested in supporting any of the shows in the Trophy Talk Network, those being Surviving the Horror, the Trophy Talk Podcast, the PlayStation Plus Game Club, and the MoogleCast, go to patreon.com/trophytalknetwork. And for now, enjoy the show. What's up, internet friends, and welcome to another episode of the PlayStation Plus Game Club. I'm your host, Kevin Garaventa, a.k.a. the Portland Kevin. And like a book club, we pick one game from the PlayStation Plus extra library and talk about it way too much. This time we're talking about Sayonara Wild Hearts, this rhythm action game developed by Simogo and published by Annapurna Interactive in September of 2019, garnered attention for being a very unique experience. It was described as a series of interactive music videos or a playable pop album. We'll explain why that is, but the best way to see why is by playing it yourself. So returning to the Game Club to talk about it is Colin Colhoven. Welcome back. How you doing, sir?
Hello, sir. Thank you for having me on the show. Much appreciated. Happy to be here discussing what I think is one of the more unique gaming experiences I've had in many years with Sayonara Wild Hearts.
It's great to have you here. We touched on this game back in the June Fireside Chat special on the Trophy Talk feed, and that was something that I thought, like, oh, we should get back to this, and it's on Josh's top 10 list, and that's where we were talking about it. But I was hoping to have Josh here today with us, but sorry everybody, he's got some family issues to take care of, so we're just going to go for it. It was one of his favorites. He recommended it, and I feel really glad for playing it after talking about it with him briefly. So
yeah, same here. It's funny you mentioned the Fireside Chat. Yeah. That's exactly what inspired me to get this game as well as apparently the inferior version of Super Stardust Portable, which I didn't realize.
That's fine. It's still good.
yeah. I'm a little bit bummed about that, but it's okay. I got that as a result of the show as well, Ape Escape. So that was a great episode you hosted. If you haven't listened to that, guys, go back and check it out and get some good recommendations and inspiration for future games to check out.
Yeah, that's a ton of fun, and we do those special episodes every time there is a fifth Sunday in the month, and guess what, folks? August is a fifth Sunday, so expect another one coming up soon. But, before we start talking about Sayonara Wild Hearts, let's jump into what's happening on your end. Anything special going on with Trophy Talk or Surviving the Horror?
Let's see. We just had Squeezy on from Down Under in Australia for our recent episode of Trophy Talk with myself and Josh, which was a ton of fun. We are in the discussion phase and in the works to try to get Smackerly on for our next episode. So again, just highlighting some more community members for that. It's been a ton of fun to do that over the years and just learn why people are into trophy hunting in their particular way. You know, what got them into it, what kind of games they're into, what kind of lists, stuff like that. So that was a really fun episode. And we also did our recent Surviving the Horror on Silent Hill Homecoming, 2008's much chagrined, I don't know what the wording would be, it's the black sheep of the family for sure for Silent Hill games, but we had a ton of fun with that one, of course, going over 3 hours. So currently for that show, I'm playing Fatal Frame Mask of the Lunar Eclipse. We'll be talking about that a little later on this month. And then in September, it's a surprise. But yeah, that's what we got going on right now.
Yeah, I had never played the Fatal Frame games at all. So I was neither. Always a little curious about those. And then Silent Hill, I stopped playing after, I think, number 4. Yeah, it was Silent Hill 4, The Room. And I
would love to play that one.
Around to those. Yeah, that's a weird one. I'll tell you, like, all the Silent Hill games are weird, but that one particularly, it started out as not a Silent Hill game, and then they adapted it to the Silent Hill series halfway through.
It's very weird. Interesting. What the heck?
Yeah, it's got a strange development history, but yeah, that's exciting. So
Fatal Frame's great so far for sure. I again have never played any of them historically, and we're jumping in at number 4, which is awful. I hate that we have to do that, but it's just because of what's available for the current consoles. And much in the same way with Silent Hill 4, it's like you can't play that on modern consoles anywhere. So if we're going to do that, we have to do through PC or some sort of other emulation at some point.
Some sort of legal gray area that
exactly.
To have some working knowledge of your computer.
Apparently, your Series S, by the way, your Xbox can be modded to become like whatever the hell you want it to be. You know, you obviously lose access to any of your normal Microsoft functionality on that machine once you do it, but you can mod this thing to play like, good, you know, the Dolphin emulator and do GameCube stuff. You can do, you know, old PC stuff, whatever. So at some point I might do that because I got a Series X a couple months back or 6 months ago at this point. So my S is just kind of chilling, not really doing much. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what my roommate did in college with his original Xbox. He modded it and then would end up just like throwing in tons of like old games on there that you had no access to, because back in 2005, game preservation was not a thing. Backwards compatibility, definitely not a thing.
Oh, God,
so
no.
I would tell him about games on the NES and he'd be like, oh, I never heard of that. And then would go on his computer, download it and find a way to play it. But
that is so cool. Speaking of game preservation, real quick plug here, Hexen and Heretic just came out. Do you have any familiarity with those? On the PS5.
It came out on the PS5. My cousins had, I think they had Hexen on PC.
Okay.
When I was a kid, so I remember seeing just a minute of it and not really understanding it, but it is sort of a like a Doom-like, right? With spells and
swords. It's a Doom-like with fantasy tropes, basically. Yeah, and it's developed by Raven Software back in the day in collaboration with id licensing out their engine basically to use, which is really cool. So it's from I think 1995 and 1996 originally as well, or something like that. It's a very old game. I was just curious if you had any history with it, because I'm tempted to check it out. I don't know if I have time to play it right now, but I do want to play it at some point.
Yeah. No, I only have a vague memory of seeing it just once and not really understanding what was going on. But, you know, I love it when these old games come to PlayStation because it gives you a chance to experience the past. And most of the time, like they get ported in a really good fashion, so you can experience them as if you were remembering how good they played earlier. And, you know, it's not like digging them out of a box and seeing how bad they look now. They've been polished in a very specific way to look like how you remember them. Mm-hmm. One of my favorites that I got to plug is the Turok Dinosaur Hunter series.
Oh, man.
Now on PlayStation. And that was originally on the N64. And that was one of my favorite shooters. Going back to it now, it's like, okay, I can see where the limitations come in, but they polished it just the right way to make it still fun. So
is it a collectathon puzzle situation, or is it mostly a shooter? I've never played the game.
It's mostly a shooter, but you, like in Doom, you have to collect keys to open doors that will then let you go other places.
Okay. That sounds great. I might have to check that out at some point.
It's pretty much Doom with dinosaurs, but there aren't as many. Yeah. There aren't as many like enemies on the field at once as like the regular Doom or Doom 2 has, but it's still a ton of fun. And it has it even now, like it gave me a few jump scares a couple of times where like a raptor sneaks up behind you and you don't know until it bites you. So
that's freaking
it's
awesome.
It's really good. It's really good. But you know, we are here today. We've been spending.
Here we go. I knew it was going to happen. I knew it.
Folks, if you enjoy this episode and want to hear more like it, please like and subscribe to the show wherever you're listening. That's the PlayStation Plus Game Club and the Trophy Talk Network. It really helps us show up more in recommended feeds and algorithms when people are looking for something to listen to. And this part, this show being part of the Trophy Talk Network, includes other excellent shows like the Trophy Talk podcast, which you are on, Colin, the Moogle cast,
that's right,
and Surviving the Horror. If you want to be part of any of these shows or this one, you can join the Trophy Talk Discord and also subscribe to our Patreon. Just search for the Trophy Talk Network Patreon or on Patreon. I really screwed that one up.
No, you got it. They'll figure it out. They'll figure it out.
The coffee is kicking in.
Oh, but, yeah, dude.
With that little bit of housekeeping out of the way, we do need to start talking about Sayonara Wild Hearts.
Hell yes.
Start off with some plat shout outs, and you know, this is our way of saying thank you for playing with us and sharing your platinum screenshot in the Discord. And we had a couple of write-ins come in. First off, we have Fate Prime, who wrote in. It seems like they come in for every single game that we cover here on the show.
They are so, a homie for sure.
Real props to this one. They said, I think the Portland Kevin is going to really enjoy this one. Gorgeous art design, soundtrack so good that I have it on repeat, and really snappy controls. The two games couldn't be more different. I think he's, I'm not sure what other game he's talking about, but
Silent Hill Homecoming.
Probably the last one, sure. Prince of Persia. But
The Lost Crown,
The two games couldn't be more different, but I think the message underneath the waves, he's talking about... I see what he wrote here. The two games couldn't be more different, but I think the message underneath the waves of Rave is actually really similar to Celeste. It's a really clever, heartfelt game and a must play.
Which you have also covered for the show.
Yeah. And Celeste is an excellent game. Definitely a different genre to go after, but it is, this definitely has like a message about hope, and it's very interpretive. It is not as blatant as Celeste. Like, mm-hmm. You can really interpret the meaning of Sayonara Wild Hearts however
you man want. I can't wait to get into it, because I thought it was one thing early on, probably for like the beginning through the middle of the game. I thought it was a particular sort of story that they were going for, and then at the end I was like, oh, I was wrong entirely. What the game is about.
So next we have Squeezy. He wrote in, this game was extremely refreshing break from the grinds I have going on at the moment. I had this one on my TV the whole time I was playing, and I usually only game at my desk. Mm-hmm. My soundbar was putting in work. I don't really listen to this genre of music, but I ended up loving the songs, and the gameplay complemented the songs so well, in my opinion. My favorite songs goes to Begin Again, which is a very good one. I can't get the shit out of my head. This is an easy 9 out of 10 for fun. I was not expecting the trophies to be as challenging as they were, but that added to the fun, to be honest. I think I clocked in at 13 hours. And we'll talk about the trophies themselves, but man.
It's like, more challenging than you think.
Yeah,
most definitely. Look at the guide, or when I initially was contemplating playing the game, I didn't try to research too much because I was like, I'm going to play it anyway, but... Yeah, I finished the game, and spoiler alert, finished the game with zero trophies popped.
Me too.
And then you have to go back and do all the stuff in the cleanup phase. But Yeah, it's pretty, you know, in some sense, I actually really liked that because it was just, you take that out of the equation and the entire experience is just like playing through the levels and having fun. I'm sure we're going to talk about favorite songs, favorite levels, all that stuff. But I would just echo the sentiment that the game was very refreshing because I hadn't played something like this in very long. I hadn't played something with this sort of mix of fun and challenge in quite a while. Mm-hmm. Usually those throttles are, you know, calibrated a little bit too far in one direction and you don't kind of get that perfect experience. I think this has both of those in spades.
Yeah. Yeah. This was really wonderful. And I echo that, you know, the music style here is not my usual listening stuff. Sometimes I jump into something kind of like it, but I could not get some of these out of my head and I loved them so much.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
Last one we have is from King K6969. He said, loved this one so much. It was my first stack, meaning that this is the second time he has earned the platinum in this game. So he probably did the PS4 and the PS5 version.
That's a big deal doing that. The first time you do that, it's you're opening the floodgates. I did it recently with Abraxia, so I get it, you know.
Yeah, I admit I did it for Outer Worlds because I loved it so damn much.
Yeah, for sure.
He went on to say, great game and great soundtrack. My daughter loves dancing to all the heartbreak songs, LOL. For me, Forest Dub takes the cake. Mm. And yeah, Forest Dub, another really good track.
For sure.
That does it for our plat shoutouts, though.
Decent number, though, I would say. Yeah. I think a lot of people, this game is gaining popularity in the Discord as we continue to talk about it more. I can't remember who brought it up, but someone was saying that it's pretty close now to competing with Toem in terms of one of those like indie darlings that many people in the Discord have actually gotten to now, which I'm very heartened to hear.
Get into a general discussion about Sayonara Wild Hearts. We'll really get into the nitty gritty.
Yeah, what the hell is it?
this game is at first I was expecting this to be something that was like, you know, you could argue that it's not a game, it's more of an experience. But after playing it for just like after playing the first stage, I thought like, oh no, this is definitely a video game. It is just heavily influenced by its own music that is playing the whole time. So this turns into like it is a rhythm game that has you do certain actions that like on the beat, but you also control a character that is flying down some sort of corridor, and they are like riding on a longboard at first, or riding a motorcycle. Sometimes they're just flying through the air, and you're controlling where they are on this corridor. Sometimes it is in lanes on a road, or sometimes you have to move in 3D space and you move up and down and left and right, kind of like you're playing Star Fox. But you're always trying to pay attention to the music to get a high score on these very short stages, which sometimes last like 30 seconds. Others last for like 3 minutes, depending on the style of the stage.
Yep.
So I really liked that part of it. But it is definitely an action game that really just relies heavily on rhythm based actions. So it's really cool, and it has incredible style, but First off, the gameplay. What are your thoughts about this?
I think the gameplay is pretty darn sublime in some sense. Like, it's so simple. There's really, like, two buttons you're pressing for the entire game. But yeah, there's enough going on with what those controls are doing for you on the screen that you're, like, locked in. You're super focused the entire time you're playing this game. It's one of the things I love about it. As, like, a sort of a testament to that, I ended up, you know, I got the Platinum, and then I purchased the game for my Switch because I was going on a boys' trip with a bunch of guys recently that I went to high school with, and I figured I want to show them this game. We normally don't play video games much on these trips, but, like, one morning we'll usually do, like, Mario Party or something for a little bit. And so hungover on the second day, we put this game on, and we sat through the entire thing and played it. And the great part was, like, passing the controller on every level. And it's so, like, pick-up and playable. I think that that's a wonderful attribute to have for a game like this. It really, it would have been at home in a mid-2000s arcade as well. If you told me that this was like a sit-down, you know, you have like a steering wheel and it's an arcade cabinet or something, like with some buttons too. Like, it would have been fantastic, I think.
It would have been like really hard for them to just project the music to this because the music is one thing that really attracts like my attention to it. So if it was in an arcade, I would have had to have heard the music while I was watching it being played.
Absolutely.
To jump into. So like, that's the one hard thing that I could see this like finding traction in
an arcade. Yeah. But that's like a really good point because it's so fucking loud in arcades. I guess I just meant more in the terms of the score chase nature and the short levels.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because like, this is based on a score. So like there are usually like heart-shaped coins that are like in lines in in the corridor that you have to chase, and you know, much like one of the Sonic games that I played on the Wii, which was terrible.
That's
how this game plays too, but this game does everything right that Sonic got wrong, and that game was Sonic and the Lost Rings.
And never heard of it.
It's not worth tracking down. Don't worry.
Okay. But, all right. Well, I'm going to a retro game store later today. Maybe if I see it, I'll just at least like look at what it is.
It was pretty much the same idea of that this game had, but it's just that it didn't feel as good to play. Mm. And part of what makes this so good, like it, as far as like the feel, is how simple it is, where you control the character, and I don't think she really has a name, but you control the character, and you just control her with the thumbstick, and then sometimes you have to hit the X button on the beat. And
actually, you can hit any button, I figured out.
Button, yeah.
Yeah, so no, because for a while, it was... it just became comfortable for me to end up doing the bumpers. So I did R1 and L1, basically, and it works just as well. So it's any button, and then the left stick. That's the controls in the game.
That makes more sense, yeah. But how its simplicity relates to its release as well, because I was reading on the Wikipedia that it's been it was originally developed for iOS, and then they decided to expand that development out to consoles. So that's why it feels so simple to play, is because they were trying to really minimize the amount of input that the player can have. And similarly, like the development company, going back to my notes, where were they?
So this is Simogo?
Simogo. I can never remember the
I've never heard of them before.
They developed a series of iOS games before then, and I didn't know who they were, but until I read their Wikipedia and was reading like what else they worked on, they worked on Device 6. And Device 6 was one of those first iOS games that I bought when I had an iPhone at some point, and tried that, and I thought, this is amazing. So anyone listening, if you have an iPhone and can find Device 6, go get that game, because that is another really cool experience. It's like a playable narrative that is sort of like a book that you're reading, but then like it has you do interactive stuff too. So it's a fascinating kind of art piece. And it's only playable on iOS as far as
I was just going to ask. Damn it.
I know that I kind of want to track it down and see if I can play it anywhere else. But if anything, if you don't have an iPhone, you could check it out on YouTube at least.
Yeah, exactly.
What it kind of looks like. Simogo put in like this sort of mobile game kind of gene into this game, but they did it right still to make it feel fun to play on the big screen on your Switch. So playing with buttons still feels really good. You don't have to worry about like finicky touch controls or something weird that translated over to button controls. So this works really well.
It's super smooth too. And I guess like the left stick is controlling a lot, but I do feel like it was pretty well tuned. You know, in most of the, like almost 99% of the time, if I died, it was not, or I made a mistake rather, it was mostly my fault. You know, it's like, I didn't feel like the game did something to me where I was like, oh, that should have registered or it should have, you know.
No, same with me. I was playing it again last night, just as like a full playthrough. And I kept saying to myself whenever I'd screw something up and like get the character killed, I'd be like, oh, no, come on, man. Like, I'd start talking to myself. Damn it, come on, I got
it. Did you do the one life mode when you were doing that? Or were you just going through? Okay.
No. I was just playing it again for fun. But
yeah, for sure.
You know, this one, it also gave me the chance to familiarize myself with, like, the story. And, you know, I do want to, like, talk about the story a bit because it's very interpretive. And what this is it's nebulous. Like, it is very much an art piece, and you just kind of get this opening narrative from a disembodied voice who's voiced by Queen Latifah. And that definitely adds to the style of this game, and I loved it. But
it starts off, you right away know it's like it's colorful and vibrant. Like, everything about the game is like loud in the beginning, which I think is awesome.
Oh yeah. Yeah, and like, you're talking like visually loud.
Yeah, like, visually loud. It's exactly.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like, there's a woman who is dealing with heartbreak, and then it starts talking about gods that were then banished and divided up into pieces, and these other five gods have stolen their pieces. And this woman who is experiencing some sort of heartbreak has been commissioned by these lost gods to track down those pieces. And you play as this woman who is just going through like this dreamlike sequence. So it's very interpretive with like how you want to look at what's really going on. Is she dealing with grief? Is she dealing with just finding herself again? You know, it is just however you want to take it, but that's one thing that I think makes a really good art, is that it reflects what people can be thinking about themselves, and also it just has different angles that you can take it.
Yeah, it touches on, what's the word that they use? I'm gonna mess it up. Arcana, a lot. So they talk about like the divine arcana, and there's this imagery that is very. It's very like hippie coded almost, but it like there's a lot of like tarot cards that play a massive part in this game, and that is a little bit lost on me. I loved it visually and I loved it thematically, but I'm sure that if you're familiar with tarot, I mean, I would guess like there's probably another layer to the game and into the story that I'm missing entirely, because I'm like, okay, the moon card. Great, there's a moon in this level that I'm playing next, but there's probably a different meaning to that card that I'm not aware of as well. Stuff like that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like the moon relates to that level, especially where like now you're chasing wolves, and
exactly,
you know, these wolves howl at the moon. So like that, that checks out. Or one of the first bosses that you fight is against a biker gang called the Devils. And, you know, like, I'm sure like there's a reference there to biker gangs and the Devils or something, but like that's another tarot card that you fight is just the Devil. At the beginning of the game, the woman is sort of assigned her own tarot card as the Fool. And so you are playing as the Fool in quotations throughout the whole game. But again, I'm sure there are certain meanings to that are just kind of lost on us, because neither you and I are that familiar with the meaning of cards like that.
No, but I have a deck of tarot cards that was gifted to me, but I have no idea how to use it. it just sits in my coffee table area, like just chilling. But
yeah,
at some point I would like to figure it out. It does seem kind of cool.
Long ago, a harmonious universe existed beyond ours, and three divine arcana watched over it. But one night, a cursed arcana intersected the astral highways, and along with her star-crossed allies, they stole all harmony and hid it in their vile hearts. Before the Divine Trio started to fade, they created a heroine from the shards of a broken heart and hoped that she would one day be strong enough to save their world.
Well, we haven't touched on this, and I feel like it's very necessary when talking
yes.
about Sayonara Wild Hearts, but the music. This is, it's sort of like a pop album, and it's got, most of its tracks don't have lyrics, but some do. And it's very much like, sort of like electronica and but like very bouncy and like bubbly electronic music, and it's just tons of fun to listen to while you're playing this. So first of all, I don't know how anyone can play this without the volume up. It is essential to actually playing the game.
100%. It's not a party chat game. It's not a like no. hop on and talk to your friends kind of game. Like, wear your 3D Pulse headset, wear your headphones, yeah. whatever, lock into this thing. Enjoy it.
The only party that this could be involved in is if you have other people in the room and mm-hmm. you just want to show this off to your friends.
Exactly, which is yeah. what I did on that boys trip I was telling you about. You know, we did play it like just on TV speakers, but we turned it up really loud and we were just kind of like hanging out in the room while we're jamming out.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
So jumping off of that, what were some of your favorite music tracks?
Oh, man. So like you mentioned, it's mostly pop and EDM mixed up. There's a track that flirts with dubstep a little bit. There's some yeah. that are more like classically leaning. Like, for example, the first track of the game is Claire de Lune, right? But
yeah.
I think
yeah.
overall, ooh man, that's a tough one. Begin Again, as I think it was King K mentioned, is a really mm-hmm. solid track, mostly because of a trophy that made me play it and get gold three times in a row.
Oh, man.
So that one just kind of, you know, stuck with me. But I actually also really liked Inside. So I was kind of a fan of these more mm-hmm. longer tracks, actually. Inside and Begin Again are two of the longest tracks in the game, I'm pretty sure. So I thought those
yeah.
were really, really solid. And then same thing with, what is it called here? I'm looking at the list. Oh, Dead of Night, I thought was great as well. Just
yeah,
for like a shorter
that
level. Yeah.
That one is like hands down one of my favorites. Like as soon
yeah.
as that one started, like that, about like 30 seconds into that song, I was like, this is it. This is my favorite track of the game. I know it already.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And there's Forest Ghost and
yeah.
Forest Dub. So there's like a dubstep forest song, and then there's one that's like a little more whimsical. And
yeah,
I guess I would describe it as a joyful track. If I was, you know, I'm not a music critic here, guys. But yeah, I think Forest Ghost was a really fun one as well, because the way that you were prompted to interact with the timing of the song and like what
yeah.
you were doing on the screen, like it just kind of elevated it. So I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What about you, though? What were some of yours?
Oh, like we already mentioned this, like Dead of Night had to be like one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And then Parallel Universes, that one, I feel like the music for that was such a unique change from what the previous tracks were that
mm-hmm.
It wasn't jarring, but it was like, oh, this is really different. And I kind of like this one, too.
It was a really great level
yeah.
in general.
Oh, yeah. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But like the music was really cool because it has like the snapping going on with the rhythm. And I like that. And then
me too.
Similar to like tracks that are just like a completely different vibe, The World We Knew was one of my favorites. And that's another of the boss fight levels where those are a little bit longer and they have lyrics involved in them. That one. It slows down the game because everything is like pumping and pumping and thumping, and then that one is just like a nice calm, like laid back game that really focuses on the vocals. And,
sure.
It is just like one of those where it's like, oh man, I kind of like how this slowed down. The gameplay didn't slow down at all, but
no, God, no.
Like, it was like, oh man, like this is some really deep emotional kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I love this particular track. So that was great. And then the last one was Wild Hearts Never Die. That's the last track in the game. That one is just a great last song, and the level itself is a great last level, but the song itself is really good because it sort of starts out kind of dark and then lifts itself up into a much brighter phase. And mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of comes full circle too with the first track of the game.
It really does. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are some of my favorite highlights. I have a list of like 10 tracks here though. Like there are other ones that I just like.
I think they're all really good. Like that's the thing is like, we could probably sit here and say, oh, I like this one for a different reason for all of the songs. But here's what I will say. And I've listened to the soundtrack a decent amount in my car and stuff like that after the fact. I just don't find it has the same resonance for me as like when I was with my like headphones on, like playing it really loud in the game. And also, I think it's key that the gameplay sound effects link up with the music in such a way in this game that it's actually better while you're playing it. Like the tracks are great, don't get me wrong, but I kept missing like the game sounds when I was listening to them at a different time, because I felt like it added to the experience and added to like the beat and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, funny thing is, the same kind of thing happened to me when I listened to the Tetris Effect soundtrack.
Yeah,
and I kind of miss like the integrated sound effects that add to the music.
Right, so, like the picking up of the little hearts and things like that all have these like very cool sounds associated with them, and that go with the beat of the music, assuming you're playing the level optimally. So you kind of get both of those mixed in when you're playing the game versus just listening.
Yeah, Other than that, though, did you just have the title screen up and listen to that music at all?
I did, because of a trophy that, you know, that made me do it, and I was happy to do it again. You know, after I realized that it's just a good song as well. Like, it sets the tone beautifully, I think, for what's coming up when you first turn it on.
Yeah, that was another one where I turned it on, and then I happened to like get up and get a glass of water to have with me while I was playing, and I listened to it while I was in the kitchen getting water, and it was like, oh man, like even this track it really pops, like
sure.
And like that track is not in the rest of the game, it's just there if you let the title screen play. So if you're listening to this and haven't played the game yet, first of all, this episode is going to be longer than it takes to play the game, so just go play the damn game.
Yeah, what is it like, would you say like an hour if you're not like me, because my thing was like, I'm going to get all the square coins and get gold rank before I move on to the next level. So I went through it pretty slow, like, because I was like, I'm not doing the next one until I'm done with this one. But yeah, I think if you were just going to sit there and play through it, it's probably like an hour or less.
Yeah. Yeah. And I recommend that being just your first playthrough, is just sit back and experience this from end to end. It's really good. Can you tell? Does it show? We touched on like how the gameplay integrates itself into the music, and I did want to ask you, what are some of your favorite gameplay sections or stages?
Yeah, interesting. I think levels like Begin Again, where, again, it's a longer track, there's more mm-hmm. going on for you to interact with, and the stage changes up a decent amount. That's pretty fun because it's you're navigating these tight corridors on a vehicle, and I liked the motorcycle levels in general, right? Yeah. And doing that, mixing it in with some flying elements and, you know, different orientation. Sometimes you're falling, sometimes you're like flying and it's like a side scroll or whatever. I think that was a really cool one. Night Drift, though, was a nice change of pace and something mm-hmm. different. So wanted to shout out that level as well. That's a fun one. You're kind of in like this mesa area, and that you have this like nighttime vista. There's beautiful stars and like shooting stars in the sky and stuff like that. And you're just driving this old school car through this level, drifting around corners, and it's probably like a minute and a half or something, but it's really fun. I think that was great. I didn't necessarily love the bow and arrow elements that they put into mm-hmm. the later levels of the game. It wasn't like it's bad by any means, but it just wasn't to me like as fun as when they added, you know, the guns onto the motorcycle, for example, or things like that. Anyway, those, I mean, I think everything they do is successful for the most part. Like nothing mm-hmm. is bad, but some things are just better than others.
Yeah, the bow and arrow section that you're talking about, that's the stage called Hate Skulls, and that game that particular stage feels a lot like one of the other music games that came to mind, which is Rez. And I don't know if you've ever played Rez, but that's
I've heard
pretty
of it.
Much like that's what the gameplay is like, except you have a lot more on screen that you have to try and target. So
gotcha.
That game is much harder, but if anyone listening liked the level Hate Skulls, then you should try the game Rez, and that is all like it. Another really cool like artistic piece that you could interpret in many ways. But going back to Begin Again, that's like the first boss fight level that you have, so it's also going to be the first long one and the first one that changes up the style of what's going on in the level too. So like
right.
The perspective occasionally in other levels will start to change, like suddenly like the road will turn sideways and now you're looking at it at another perspective. Or sometimes it goes to a top down kind of thing and now it's a bullet hell kind of shooter kind of thing where you're not shooting at all, but like you're having to dodge obstacles that are coming vertically off the screen or sideways, whatever.
Yeah. But, absolutely.
Again, has you face off against this biker gang and you dodge their like energy blasts to a beat and then have the character jump up on top of her bike and surf it for a few seconds and then swing a sword to the beat, which is just pretty awesome. So like mm-hmm. it feels like you're a badass when you get the rhythm right in this game.
Right. Right. And those prompts have like scores as well, right? So you have like an okay. I think it's okay, good, and perfect. I mean, there might be a worse one than that, but basically the more in tune with the beat that you are, the better points mm-hmm. and score that you're going to get for those button prompts as well. So it encourages you to like pay attention to the music even more.
Yeah, yeah. And as far as like hitting those beats go, like it's very forgiving, even to a point where sometimes the game just pauses and lets you like just completely miss that beat, but still just waits for you to hit that button prompt.
So oh yeah, 100%.
It doesn't care whether or not like you would miss that beat. It's just that if you do make it and like hit it perfectly, then you get rewarded with more points. So that's
mm-hmm.
good.
Mm-hmm.
Other like great levels. You mentioned Inside, and that's the where like the final boss is of the game.
Yes.
That one was really awesome because it has this multi-phase boss fight, and every time I thought it was over, it just started another phase. And I was like, well, she just keeps going. Like now she's a demon that is flying in the air. Oh my God.
Yeah. It gets really crazy by the end. And you're using like your sword, you're using the bow and arrow, you're using a bunch of different tech that you've kind of gathered throughout the game to finish it off.
Even at one point, you're not even controlling where the woman is on screen. You're controlling the orientation of the screen itself.
Exactly.
And that's like, another like mind-breaking moment that you just have to try and like wrap your head around on the fly and figure out before you crash into a barrier or something. It's really cool. But again, it would really trip me up sometimes. To a point where it's like I had to repeat sections and just like have the song and the track repeat just like the last like 5 seconds over and over and over. And at one point my wife was on the, we were talking about the game later and she goes, you know, this game is good. I like it. But, sometimes when you mess up, those tracks get really grating because it just repeats over and over.
Oh my gosh. Like, yeah.
I said, well, okay. Yeah. I'll try and not fuck it up.
Yeah, my bad. I'm sorry. I'm bad at the game. Sorry, I messed up.
Honestly, it's true, I'm terrible though. At rhythm games, so I'm not surprised. But like, it was just really funny.
I had trouble with some of the button prompts, like admittedly too, because
yeah.
I don't like. There was something about the way that the visual indicator told you when it was a perfect versus a good versus an okay that I didn't really even understand at the end. Like I just kind of ended up having to go with the beat, but they try to do this thing where they show you the visual indicator as well to help you, but it honestly made it harder for me. So once I stopped like paying attention to that, I was like, all right, well, like I'm better off
just listening to the music, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Except for there's one trophy where you have to only get good prompts, which god dang, that was a tough one because your mind sounds, is so you're so keyed into getting the perfects that you can't really do it.
Oh man, that sounds so hard. Okay,
it's
so,
for a whole level, and then you're like it's kind of ridiculous.
So a couple of other levels that I loved that we haven't mentioned yet. We did talk about the music for Parallel Universes, but the level itself has you driving your bike down a highway through a city, and there. The enemy that you're like facing off against in this level is a pair of twins that originally was one person, and the tarot card I think was Gemini, and your twins, character used a sword to like cut the character in half, and it became two people, and now these two people are twins and they are floating through the air and snapping to a beat, and every time they snap in the music track, the world shifts back and forth between two dimensions, and you have to track the barriers that are coming at you in both sides of it. And
yes,
also like figure out like what's going to be like, which of these two realms is going to be present when it reaches where the woman is and where my character is. So then I have to pay attention to what's coming at me in like two different worlds, and you only get to see one at a time. So you have to really pay attention, and it is one of the harder levels that I found, but still like I loved this kind of challenge because it felt like similarly to that one level in Titanfall 2 that tons of people talked about. This one, it just had you trying to like fit all this information in duplicate in your head and pay attention to two things at once. It was one of the coolest things that I think this game could throw at you.
Yeah, that is a really cool level. And it was one of the ones that when I was passing the controller around with my friends that they were like, what? You know, like it's a very, it's a very trippy thing. And I think the game should be commended in that the gameplay is pretty much similar in all the levels in its core function and what you're doing, right? And how you navigate and all that stuff. But there is always a new mechanic in pretty much every single level to some degree. Mm-hmm. Like, even if it's small, you know, it could be the teleporters getting introduced. So, you know, if you go through one slipstream in one of the heartbreak levels, it teleports you to a different one to get you more of the coins. Or on the next heartbreak, you can go from left to right on the screen, like in the old Asteroids game or something, right? Or Reverie is like a first-person VR experience. The World We Knew is like a, you know, again, like an Asteroids or Space Invaders style experience. So everything is like a little bit different every single level, and it just keeps the experience moving and interesting to your brain. You're getting good music and a slightly new gameplay hook every like three minutes.
Yeah, even like the in the final boss level in Inside, that one has that moment where you start to rotate the screen and instead of your character. And that's something completely new, even at the end. And most of the time one of the rules about game development is you do not introduce a new element during a boss fight, especially during the final boss fight. But this one does, and it does it really well. And I think having something new introduced every single track is key in making that feel consistent. So that works really well. We mentioned the Heartbreak levels. They're literally called Heartbreak, and it's just Heartbreak 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. Even on Heartbreak 5, something new is coming in. And it looks visually a lot like the other Heartbreak levels, but this one starts you off sailing a boat with some calm and serene music. It's really nice. And then it accelerates in music and speed when the boat goes off a waterfall. And now you're just flying through the air, and it's like thumping. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. That ship part at the beginning is really fun. I was very frustrated trying to get a couple of those square coins in that level for a bit. But totally, I do like it visually.
There's like one of those square coins that's like really high up in the air, and you have to wait for a high wave to come along, and you have to ride the wave up to the coin. So that was awesome. I felt like a badass, like reaching that one. So that was cool.
Oh, for sure. It's very cool. And we should mention too, like, you don't stop in this game. I don't know how it is with every rhythm game, but like, you always have a forward momentum, like as the character and the avatar that you're controlling. So you can't like go back for stuff. Like, you're on a path, you're moving a set speed. You can kind of move up and back like within that square, within the screen that you're navigating at the time, but you can't like go back to areas. So missing things or like messing up on your score, like, you're doing the whole level again, basically. Yeah.
And you know, these levels are mostly short, so that's fine.
Exactly. That's why it doesn't matter.
Slow down at all. Like you can't change your speed.
Exactly. That's kind of what I meant. Yep. Yep. Which is cool, but it's fucked at the same time.
And then like we touched on the track The World We Knew, and this one takes place just on a VR visor of a character. Mm-hmm. And like that one, It has you dodging tons of obstacles all at once. And then at a certain point, this is like a boss fight where a large enemy comes onto the screen, and your 8-bit character starts to shoot out pulses of bullets while you're still trying to dodge bullets yourself. So that was really awesome. That's one that I would just like, okay, well, I'm going to bookmark this one and come back to it because I just want to replay this level over and over.
For sure. Yeah.
And then, the very last level is Wild Hearts Never Die. And this is after the boss fight of Inside, but Wild Hearts Never Die starts out as another phase of the final boss fight. So like, you go through Inside and that's the final boss track. And the whole track is focused on fighting the last boss, which is the fifth one. I forget its name. I think it was Death, and like has the Death Tarot card. But
I think so. Let me check. I can check for you.
You go through
it's
this whole
the Sun, and okay, so Inside is the Sun, and 23 is all tarot cards. The next level. Weird. Okay.
Yeah. Because then, like Inside, you go through that whole fight against the Sun, and it devolves into just like this. You fight, like, starting out it is another woman, and then she devolves into like this demon that has a giant cyclops eye, and then you defeat that. The Inside track ends, and then when Wild Hearts Never Die starts, the eye has just become giant, and you have to fight just the eye itself. Mm-hmm. And that's a crazy fight where it starts to throw all the tarot cards at you. And that's like a really intimidating thing. And then once you defeat that, the track changes to then be sort of like this victory lap of all the mechanics and all the boss fights that you had. But instead of fighting the bosses again, the woman kisses them. And
give them a little smooch, like, on the cheek or on the mouth. And unclear, because it's very, you know, rudimentary graphics.
Very unclear. But she instead of fighting against them and hating them, she embraces them.
Right.
And that is that. Here is the interpretive part of the story, but it's just kind of like, what is she embracing and what was she fighting all along? It's up to you to decide.
Right.
But you know, this was something that was really cool and just kind of like kind of made me feel good just watching it, where it's like, oh, like she is doing something positive now rather than fighting against them. She's like giving them love, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know about you, in the beginning of the game through probably halfway, I thought the story was something different. Like I mentioned before, I thought it was something akin to like a Scott Pilgrim scenario where she was going and fighting all of her evil exes. Okay. So I interpreted this as like, she's going through the phases of her life and the different like interests and stuff that she has. So that's why some things are more like dubsteps and like trippy things. And then you have like, you know, punk rock, and you've got like pop album, all these like different people that she maybe has dated along the way. And, you know, kind of like revisiting that. That's what I thought was happening initially. But then at the end of the game, in this level that you're describing, I'm like, oh, are those just all different parts of herself that she's now okay with and is like incorporating into one? And now she's happy with who she is? Again, open to interpretation. Yeah. They don't really say.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell because there's only narration at the very beginning and the very end. And it's not much. It's very short. So
yeah, you're talking like five sentences at most.
and so it's like whatever, it doesn't matter really gives you. It's what you interpret what you're seeing. And you know, that's really cool. Like it could mean anything. Like who knows really what shooting all those wolves mean in Night Drive. But
yes,
you know, you have to take what you see and figure it out for yourself. So like that's the mark of great art that has a lot of great interpretations that fit into it. One other thing that I know that you love to go after are the trophies. So I finished this game, got zero trophies. I didn't care. I still loved this game and loved like the experience of it. I still have not earned a single trophy in this game. I don't care.
Oh, nice. You can just move on.
to hell with my completion percentage. I don't care. I don't care about that. But, you know, I just love the experience. However, the trophies in this game are very unique, where you finish the game and then it gives you a handful of clues to go out to use to try and figure out what some of those trophies really are and what the requirements are. However, you could just go online and look up what are the actual requirements. And
Which is what I did, to be clear, because like there's no way that I was going to figure some of those out.
Like these are so nebulous. It's like I have no idea what this means. So I mean, I could guess about a couple of them, but what were some of your favorite challenges or like hardest challenges that you had to overcome with this? Because you got all the trophies in this game, right?
I did get all the trophies. I got the platinum in what? Let me tell you how long it took me. 2 days and 20 hours. So I was like, when I was playing this game, I was like obsessed with it. You know, I just would play it in the evening for like 2.5 hours each night or you know, I think it actually, no, more than that. Because it took me, I want to say I had like 11 hours or 12 hours to get the platinum, something like that. But so, yeah, a couple of them are not too difficult. You know, as far as trophies, it'll be things like on Doki Doki Rush, get 10 or 20 like near misses or like perfect evades, right? So you'd get extra points when you would go really close to something and not hit it. So stuff like that you can do in like a minute and it's not too hard. But then there's other ones, just generally speaking, you have to get gold rank on every single level and you have to get all of the square coins, all the collectibles basically on every single level. And that opens and upgrades your like in-game content to allow you to do this, not album playthrough, but there's a playthrough that basically you have one life And you have to get a certain point total in that one life mode for a trophy. And basically that equates to getting probably halfway, like through the wolf boss fight in the forest without getting hit or dying, which is, you know, it's not crazy hard, but it's not easy either. And yeah, I think that was probably one of the tougher ones. Another one is that I absolutely hated is on Night Drive. You have to get 0 points on that level.
What? Oh, no.
Yeah, so as you know, like, drifting gets you points, even very minor amounts. So you can't hit any, like, you can't accidentally pick up one little coin. You can't get any of the square coins. You can't drift around corners to get points. So, like, while the game is constantly pushing you forward at a fast speed. So that one probably took me, I don't know, like an hour and a half of tries over and over again.
God.
And then another one I mentioned to you is you have to get only good prompts for an entire level. And it's one of the boss fight levels where you're doing tons of button prompts. You got to get that middle one. And it's so tough that eventually what I had to do is actually turn off the music, like take my headset off and turn off the vibration in the game and just try to do it that way. And that also took me almost 2 hours of tries just for that one trophy. Stuff like that, it was was pretty annoying.
I understand that. And that's why when I after I finished it, I looked at the actual trophy requirements and I looked at them and I said, no, I'm not gonna do that. No, I'm just gonna I'm gonna enjoy the game. That's it.
I don't think you need to. I mean, what is fun and what I would recommend if you want to get any of the trophy, like getting gold on all the tracks is fun. Getting all the collectibles is fun because it's just like, I don't know, it's a score chase game. Of course you want to see if you can get the gold rank. But so the way the calculation works in this game, when you are getting the small coins, the small hearts and the bigger hearts and the square coins, you're building a multiplier up, okay? Mm-hmm. So even though it looks like you're not getting many points in the beginning, by the end, your multiplier is such that like you've accumulated a bunch, you're going to hit the total. The caveat is if you get hit or if you die, your multiplier resets no matter what point in the level you're at. So if you are at the three quarters mark and you die, there's no way you're going to get gold anymore, basically. So it ends up being you have to beat each level pretty much without dying while collecting all of the collectibles in a single run, plus most of the miscellaneous coins on the map. And you have to do that for every single level.
Wow.
So, it's a really fun challenge, though, like that I would encourage people to try to do. Even for a couple, like if you don't want to pop a trophy and mess up your list or whatever, you can just do it for a few of the levels and see what it's like.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've gushed about this game for almost an hour, but
yes,
I like to ask near the end of every episode, who should try out Sayonara Wild Hearts? Who would you recommend this game to?
I think I would recommend this game to almost anybody, to be honest. I think it's a very universally appealing game. It's short enough that even people who don't have a lot of time and maybe very casually play video games, like, you know, 2 hours a week or something like that, like you could beat this game. You could see everything that it has to offer. And especially if you're a music lover, and maybe you even write music or produce your own music, like this is a great game to check out in that sense as well. Pretty much anybody, dude. That's the thing. I would recommend it to my wife as well as my friends who only play Call of Duty, as well as my friends who, you know, like it's kind of like across the board, but I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like this is almost a universal kind of game that, you know, anyone that doesn't play games could ask, like, hey, like, what are games like these days? You could show them this and blow their mind. Where it's kind of like, well, it doesn't look like, you know, super realistic as like Call of Duty or Battlefield now. But this is something that the games can do that take a different direction. And you can see like how they become a piece of art. And this is a great argument for that, much like the argument we made about Shadow of the Colossus when I had you on the Game Club last time. So,
oh yeah, for sure.
You know, or the first time, that was it.
I was gonna say, and, because I did that in Proteus. I think this is my third appearance on the show.
But this is a great art piece. This is the kind of thing also I want to show to my 11-year-old niece, and I think she would love this game. Because she loves Taylor Swift. She's and that's that this game kind of feels like a Taylor Swift album almost. And
it's not normally music I would listen to.
No.
I should say that as well. This is not like normally my jam, but I still loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I think she would love this too. And I kind of just, I'm wondering, like, should I just gift her this on the Switch? And
I think so.
She thinks. But yeah, like I feel like also I should just like show this to my sister, my mom or whatever. And like they might think it's really cool.
Right. I had Stephanie come in and just put the headset on when I was playing a couple times and just like listen and watch and get the experience of like watching me play it and like listening to the music, you know, and she really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I think it's great for that.
My wife said this is might not be a great spectator game, but I think it depends on what kind of you're expecting as far as a spectator. Like, are you expecting to have just like some thumping music at a party, or do you want like a full story that you can follow?
Yeah.
This is not like going to be a story that can be followed, but from like somebody watching, but it's just there to like provide a vibe.
Exactly. It's there as an experience, right? As a contained experience that is, like you mentioned multiple times, very interpretive. And if you're okay with that and just kind of like the synesthesia of like the sound and music and the visuals and like the tactile movement of like just like controlling it all together, it's a wonderful thing, I think, for anybody to check out. Yeah,
synesthesia.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I might even double stack this guy. Speaking of King K here, go back and get the PS4 version at some point. Yeah. I'm not going to do it immediately, but it's one of those games that I do think, and Josh mentioned this as well when he recommended it, that he goes back and plays it from time to time, even though he has the Platinum, just because it's a fun game to just turn on for like 20 minutes if you're not sure what you're going to play next.
Thinking about other recommendations, this being a book club style podcast, we have an actual books and more segment. So are there any other great music rhythm games that you could think of that are kind of like this or that you recommend for people that liked this game?
Ooh, man, that's a wonderful question that I am ill-equipped to answer, because the reality is I don't really play rhythm games almost ever. Like, that's another reason why this was such a refreshing change of pace for me, is because I never really get into a game like this. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, it clicked with me. You know, the closest thing I could tell you about a rhythm game that kind of feels like this that I played is honestly Ghost Runner.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because
some of the motorcycle sections definitely feel like Ghost Runner.
100%. Yeah, and like there is an element of, there's like this really... It's a different style of music with Ghost Runner, but like a grungy sort of like beat going on, and it's quick death, quick restart, just like this game. And the goal is to kind of get through the thing in this like perfect flowing motion. But rather than going, you know, and maneuvering left and right and picking up coins, you're going to be deflecting bullets and double jumping and sliding and like, you know, doing more combat, quote unquote, in Ghost Runner than you are here. But I think they're kind of more similar than people would maybe think.
Yeah, good shout, man. I didn't think of that one. Some that I have noticed that like one of the closest ones that I can think of is the Bit Trip series, and that started out on the Wii, and then the whole Bit Trip collection is on PS4, and that one is it's much more like retro style, where it sort of mimics games like Pong, Breakout, even like occasionally like Pac-Man and Spy Hunter. Like it sort of mimics these in a very weird way, but it has a rhythm spin to it. And if you're curious at all about that, check it out on YouTube and then like see if it's for you, and you might like it. one of the easier ones in that, though, is that it is, I don't think it's actually included in, well, it might be included in the package if you buy the BitTrip series, but you might get as an extra Runner 2, which is the sequel to BitTrip Runner. And that had its own standalone trophy list. And because it released on PS3 and then PS4 along with the Wii. But and then like the BitTrip series released later as a collection.
Oh, okay.
And Runner 2 is it's got fantastic music. And you just run from left to right at a constant speed. And you have to jump, dodge, or kick stuff out of the way to a very specific rhythm. And it becomes kind of like you're reading music on the fly as stuff is coming at you.
Oh, that's kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool. If you're just curious about this style kind of game, go get Runner 2. It's just like, it's one of my favorite games ever. And it's another one of those where it's like, I earned the trophies on it and then continued playing it just because I loved the music so much. Mm-hmm. And also, I earned the stack on PS3, then PS4, PS Vita, and...
Oh, dang, yeah.
If there's a stack on PS5, I'll go for it, because it's really that good.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, go check out Runner 2. That's the one that like that I'd recommend the most after playing Sayonara Wild Hearts.
Okay.
Other ones, like Rez is a game that was on Dreamcast, and... has been ported on to PS4, so check that one out. That one feels kind of like the bow and arrow level, where you have a reticle on screen and you try and target stuff and then release a shot that homes in on all the stuff you targeted to a beat. And if you release that shot on a beat, then you get a higher score. So that's very very centric on like shooting and rhythm and stuff. That's kind of cool. Thumper is another one that is
I've heard of that one. Okay. So
that one is hard as nails, though. Like I got halfway through that and then like couldn't understand why I wasn't succeeding, and it was just like I don't know, I'm done with this one. It was really cool, but I can't get any farther.
The other one that it's coming to my mind now that I have not played, so I should caveat that, is Metal Hellsinger.
Yes.
Was like something that came out recently, right?
You would probably love that. I played through that one and platinumed it. It's really good, and it can be very forgiving as far as staying on beat goes, but it is pretty much Doom with a music rhythm element to it. So,
right.
Again, if you love this style kind of game where like you have to do things on the beat and you love Doom, like you're probably going to love Metal Hellsinger.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe I should look into that then. I kind of forgot that game came and went in my mind. I remember Eli was very excited about it because he's a metal person. So I knew he was going to be checking it out, but I looked through my whole list right now on PSNP. This is the only rhythm game I've played on PS4 or 5. Yeah.
Little inside baseball thing here, but Max and I were planning on covering Metal Hellsinger for the Game Club episode that he was on.
And oh, wow. Okay.
In like that month, they removed it from the extra list. And so we were like, well, shit, we can't do it now. Like, what are we going to do?
Yeah, that's annoying.
We went with Curse to Golf instead. But, I played through Metal Hellsinger really like within the week that I had left on it. And it was great. So it's a nice short platinum, too. So pick it up if you're curious about it. But only other one that I can think of for a recommendation as far as rhythm goes is Tetris Effect. Like that one just integrated its music into the game. You don't really have to worry about rhythm so much, but it just melds music and rhythm really well together.
Hmm. Okay. So, Heck yeah. And, some good recommendations there.
Yeah. Another one where it's like, I don't care about the trophies. I just love the music and the gameplay. So this is great.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Oh, and then like Josh, we talked about this one at length on the Fireside Chats episode, but Sound Shapes, which
purchased that game because of that episode. One, again, I picked Super Stardust incorrectly, Ezra, but that was the other one I was considering, and I did look at it in the store. It ultimately came down to the trophy list, which, you know, you shouldn't try to let things do that for you if you don't want, but for me, I cared, so I was like, yeah, I'm just going to go with, you know, go with overall shorter experience.
It seriously, though, like, the trophy list on Sound Shapes is amazing, so go get it. Like, it's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, damn it. I'm already like, dude, I have like, because I'm crazy, I legitimately have planned out like what I'm playing through like February of next year, you know, with like some rare exception for Surviving the Horror. We don't know what we're doing for January yet or for November, but I know what I'm doing every other month in that show already all the way through February. And it's like, it's August, you know, so it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, like, also, speaking of like, getting multiple stacks, I got all three stacks of Sound Shapes. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I remember you saying that on the episode. That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's freaking awesome.
But, anyways, like you brought this up. You've got everything planned out. What are you currently playing or reading or watching that you'd want to recommend to anybody?
For sure. Well, on Trophy Talk, I recommended Drive to Survive to everybody. So, quick shout-out to that show on Netflix, again, if you've not, you know, checked it out. I'm playing Mass Effect 3 and The Division 2 right now. Those are kind of like my two big games that I'm working on.
Yeah.
Division 2 is, you know, obviously very multiplayer centric. I'm doing that usually on Friday and Saturday for like 2 hours a night with Skrillis and Josh, which has been a ton of fun. Last night we ended up playing the Battlefield 6 open beta instead, which I really enjoyed actually. So I'm considering... It runs this weekend and next weekend. So I'm going to try to do a couple more sessions of it and see if the honeymoon period wears off, right? And if I still feel like I really am liking it after a couple weeks, then maybe I would consider getting it. But the main thing, Mass Effect 3, right? Like, I'm really digging this game so far. I'm not very far in, even though I have, like, 48% of the trophies done. I've been doing, like, everything on the side as I go, like, exploring everywhere, like, talking to everybody, all the side quests. So I'm not really that far in the main story as of yet, but I'm really liking it. I think like, you know, it's more action heavy than the previous two Mass Effect installments that I played, and every kind of installment gets a little less RPG-ish as you go, but it's the culmination of the story. It's really exciting so far, and I'm just loving the sci-fi lore and the world that they've built. The characters, the payoffs to the things that you've done for like the last, you know, because I think I have 70 hours across the three titles so far combined. Wow. So it's like, you know, 30 hours with the first two games a piece. And I've got probably like 10 so far with Mass Effect 3. And it's just, it's great. You know, I'm going to be sad when it's over, but also really happy because it was a goal of mine to finish that trilogy. It's, you know, people recommend it. I know you love it. One of my best friends since I was like 14 absolutely loves it. He was trying to get me to play it for like a decade, and I've finally done it. And so, and then maybe I'll get into Mass Effect Andromeda. I know it's not as good, but, you know, might as well see what it's all about.
Yeah. As far as Mass Effect 3 goes, like, I'm not ashamed to admit it. Like, this game has made me cry in three different parts of it. And then, like, I've played through it, like, five times, I think.
Is it your favorite in the trilogy or no?
It's a hard question because like the second one I loved, and I think as far as like the structure of like what the game is and how it progresses, two is probably my favorite. But when it comes to the story, I think three it is like my favorite part of the story itself.
And, gotcha.
It is. Like there are multiple points in that story where like I remember playing it for the first time and the exact thing that I was thinking to myself and why I was almost in tears. And like even the last time I played it near the end, I like just talking to a character, I don't know why I started to well up, and I'm just like, why am I almost about to cry? He's just saying how good this has been. Why?
What's going on?
I know why. It's because this is the last time I'm ever going to see him. God damn it. That's why.
Yeah, you get all these these connections to these characters, right? Yeah. And it's
But it is something so special. And I think that's because it is an epic that spans like a decade of games, and like it came out in 2007, and I think, 2007 was the first one, and then the third one released in 2012. So not a whole decade, but like the better part of a decade. And it connects the story so well, and also your decisions from one to the next. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it feel so epic, is that this is not just something that you've done over the course of one game, but it is stuff you've done over the course of three games.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's, and I'm importing my character each mm-hmm. time as well, because I don't know. Have you done the Legendary Edition
yeah.
list? You have. Oh, yeah. Okay. So you know how there's the overarching list between the games, and there's a gold trophy to do it with like all three of them. The yeah. thing that I'm kind of like annoyed with myself on now that I didn't do is I never did them on Insanity difficulty. So now I'm going to finish this game and feel like pretty good about it. But the overarching yeah. list, I'm going to be missing all those trophies for doing them on Insanity. I don't know how hard that is, though, because to be honest, this is embarrassing. Don't tell people. That's why it's on the record and we're recording. So everyone's going to know. I was playing through Mass Effect 3 and I was like, dude, this is like really easy. I don't know what's going mm-hmm. on. Like, this feels like way easier than the first two games. And I go to the settings and I was like, it's on casual, dude.
Oh,
no wonder yeah, it felt so yeah. easy. So then I even put it up to normal, and I kept playing it like how I'd been playing it the first 5 hours, and I was like, oh, I'm getting wrecked now. Like, yeah. oh my God, yeah. you know? So anyway, yeah, Insanity seems like it would be tough. I don't know if you've tried that, but
it depends. It depends on the class that you're running, like whatever.
I'm just a soldier,
abilities
basically.
You invest in. Yeah. If you go for Insanity, I highly recommend using, one of the, I think it's a class, I can't remember which one it's called. It might be Sentinel, but
mm-hmm.
One of the classes gets biotics and also sniper rifles. And so okay. like those two key to like figuring any situation out. And I feel like I got to a point, it could have been in the second or the third one, where on Insanity, I was having my biotics recharge over the course of like 3 to 5 seconds, and so I was just firing them off at enemies every single like chance I could, and it just wrecked them, because like nobody could get close to me, and I was like, okay, well, to hell with the guns, I'm just gonna use my force powers, that's it.
Yeah, those seem yeah. super strong in the third yeah. game especially. Yeah, there's a couple like combat trophies that are a little annoying. Like, you have to get 100, you have to lift 100 enemies off the ground in the third game, and you can use Liara's mm-hmm. singularity for that. But for whatever reason, the game's glitched and it doesn't count those. So you have to be the one to yeah. do the thing to get them off the ground. So I did this weird thing where I kind of went out of order, and I did the Omega DLC pretty early on. You know what I'm talking mm-hmm. about? Yeah, oh, yeah, because you get the lash ability from that, which will count towards the other trophy. So like, mm-hmm. and my buddy Joe was telling me I've kind of done myself a disservice, because I did that and I accidentally did the Leviathan DLC early as well.
Oh no, that's like yeah, last thing you want to do.
That's the last thing you want to do. And because it's like, well, they give it to you so early in the game,
yeah,
and
there,
since it's
yeah.
all tied together, there's no distinction of like, hey, you should do this later on. It's like all in the first like opening, you know, 10 hours of the game. I was like, okay, this yeah. sounds cool. I'm just going to go do this. Like,
yeah. if you don't know, you can stumble into it and be like, okay, well, that's interesting. Lovecraftian kind of thing happening in Mass Effect. Cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. Yeah. It was just like, ah, I wish I would have saved that for later, but yeah, whatever. Yeah. You know, no big deal. No big deal. Yeah. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. Mass Effect 3 is the main thing, and
cool.
then yeah, just Division 2 slowly on the side. And Fatal okay, Frame well, for surviving
yeah,
the war.
Enough about this Mass Effect episode. Let's
yeah.
other things.
It's basically turned it into an N7 cast.
yeah. other things that I've been reading right now, I've been reading the fifth book in the expansions, the Expanse series, Nemesis.
Fantastic.
Games, and that's really cool. I've loved all four of the books. This fifth one is great so far too. But it has me wondering in the middle of it, are these characters just constantly going to be in apocalyptic events? Like every single book happens in
yes.
some sort of apocalypse. And, you know, that's what's happening in Expanse every time.
Yeah.
I should expect it now.
this the fifth book I'm trying yeah. to remember is there's no you haven't had a time jump, have you?
No.
Okay. Fantastic. All right. Good. I can't remember. There's 9 books, so at some point
oh, yeah.
the timing changes a bit. And I just couldn't remember if it was at the fifth one or it might be at book 7, 8, and 9 that are like
mm-hmm.
set apart a little bit. But you'll get to that when you get to it.
Yeah. Yeah. But then as far as playing goes, the one thing I can highly recommend, again, like Device 6, you know, if you have an iPhone, go check that out. Because it came out like, I think 2012 or 2013. But like maybe even earlier, I should look at the Wikipedia when I have a chance, but, that one is a really interesting experience. So, you know, go
I'll have to check it out. Do you know if it's on Android or is it only iOS? I guess I can find out right now.
I just searched on Android, couldn't find it. So I think it's only iOS, unfortunately,
wanker.
But yeah. And then the other recommendation I have is for next month's game, which is going to be the Forgotten City. So this one,
what is that? I'm going to look it up.
This was our July voted game in the Discord.
Yeah.
This one narrowly beat out one of the other games. I don't remember what other game was like really close to it, but the Forgotten City did win. And
this looks cool.
Yeah, it is a very interesting. It's got a very interesting development history that we'll talk about more. But it started off as a Skyrim mod and just became its own game. So
wow, what the heck?
Pretty fascinating. So, do you think you're gonna jump into that or just like, you know, check out the list at all?
I don't know. I'm looking at the list right now. It looks cool and I like the conceit of it. 2 out of 10 difficulty, 4 playthroughs, mm-hmm. 15 hours. It's pretty short. So potentially here's the problem. Okay, not to talk about Mass Effect again. But when I looked into Mass Effect Trophy Guide, the reason I started playing it right now was because it was like, hey, it's a 25-hour platinum for Mass Effect 3. And I was like, that's not bad at all. And then I start playing it. And I start reading the comments, which I forgot to do in the beginning of the guide, and they're like, "There's no way this is a 25-hour platinum. It's at least like 50
right,
to 60.
Yeah.
It's like 50 to 60 hours. Like, what the hell?" And I'm like, "God damn it!" So now I don't know if I'm gonna have time because the main thing is like Silent Hill F is coming out at the end of September, mm-hmm. and that's what we're talking about on Surviving the Horror in October. So I really want to be done with stuff by then. So and I'm going out of town for like 5 days at the end of this month. So I don't know, dude. I would love to. But there's so many of these other games. Like, I really want to try to get to, like, RoboCop, Rogue City. Mm-hmm. I want to try to get to maybe another old Assassin's Creed game. So, who the fuck knows? This does look cool, though.
It does, yeah. And I'm going to have to start it in, like, the next week. Because I, too, am going out of town at the end of the month. And so, I'm going to be going to PAX up in Seattle. And
yeah, that's awesome.
Anyone listening, if you're going to PAX, too, I'd love to meet up with you. So, send me a DM in the Discord. But if you listeners are planning on playing the Forgotten City, remember that you can be part of the show by getting involved with our Discord and posting your plat shout out there or just writing in to the Discord about, you know, with a comment about the game, and also subscribe on Patreon to get some special perks. So
yes sir,
yeah, you can be part of the other shows as well, the Trophy Talk podcast proper, the Moogle cast, and Surviving the Horror.
That's right, baby.
But, you know, other than that, Colin, where can people find you if they want to get in touch with you?
Yeah, like, as mentioned, the Discord is for sure the best place to get in touch with me. But on top mm-hmm. of that, because I'm weird, guys, I literally do not use social media. Like, Discord is the only social media I have even installed on my phone. So I'm not trying to be rude. I just don't have anything, you know.
I'm on YouTube. I've stopped using it myself as well. Like, I still have accounts, but I barely check them.
It feels great, to be honest with you. I haven't really used it regularly in multiple years, probably to the detriment of the shows. But regardless, you know, I enjoy it for my own personal mental health. So anyway, Discord is the best place to get in touch with me. On top of that, on PlayStation and on Xbox, my username/gamertag is CKPresent. We've got various different, you know, chats and like threads that are on PlayStation. We have a Trophy Talk podcast party chat that we will join in sometimes on PlayStation. That's a good place to chat with me. But feel free to shoot mm-hmm. me a friend request or DMs or whatever. And, you know, I'll definitely get back to you. And Discord, find me there.
Awesome.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah. And you can find me by searching for the Portland Kevin. I do have a Blue Sky account and I remember to check it about once every 3 months. So,
right.
You can contact me there, hopefully, but, I am also on Discord at the Portland Kevin and, you can contact the show that way as well. So, send me a DM if you have thoughts about the Forgotten City, but, thank you, Colin. Thank you for talking about Sayonara Wild Hearts and, you know, kind of just waking up this morning and
absolutely, it's a lovely game
coming in after your run.
Of course, sir. Of course, I'm glad we could make it work. Josh is probably going to critique the hell out of this episode because we missed certain things. But you don't get to say anything, Josh, because you weren't here, okay? But in general, I would say that I'll leave you with this. It's a fantastic game. I would recommend it to everybody. Thank you for having me on, Kevin.
Yeah, thank you so much, Colin. And for anyone listening, thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a great day, and sayonara, Wild Hearts.
Sayonara, Wild Hearts.